Welcome to the Building BN podcast, where we take an inside look at Bloomington Normal economic development with industry pros, local businesses, and community partners. Hosted by your BN EDC.
Recording from our offices in Uptown Normal, we would like to welcome today's guests from the McLean County Regional Planning Commission. We have Ray Lai, their executive director, and Jennifer Six, transportation planner. We hope you enjoy.
Born and raised in Hong Kong, went to Canada for my undergraduate education in regional and urban planning. I didn't know that's what I would end up the career, but I was choosing major, and that seems really interesting. And because my interest was in geography, in people, in social science, and so that's a perfect fit. And so after graduating from the college or university up there, University of Saskatchewan, and then came, it was too cold for me, came down south to Southern Illinois University for my graduate school and for my master in city and regional planning. And since then, been working in different local governments in the St. Louis metropolitan area on both the Illinois side and the Missouri side, the St. Louis side, and including the city of Edwardsville. And then went overseas for a few years working for a global consultancy, came back to the States, and then actually I before coming to Bloomington, working for the McLean County Regional Planning Commission, I was with the city of Decatur for a few years. So it was in Southern Illinois and in Central Illinois. And so yeah, this opportunity came up, and was considering this, because all through my career, I've worked for like a different type of communities. I've worked on regional projects, planning projects, but never really worked for a regional planning commission or MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization. So I thought this is a great opportunity for my career, and also be able to apply what I've learned all these years into this area. And this area is really exciting, because one of my college, actually graduate school roommates, he graduated from ISU a long time ago. He got a double degrees. His second master was in city planning. We were in the same class too, but his first master degree was in like sociology. And so it's not new to me. On my way to Chicago from St. Louis, it's always seen this normal Bloomington on the side of the highways or subdivisions being built. And so kind of seeing how it has evolved. So I thought it's a great opportunity. And from some of the people that I know in this area, and so it'd be great to work for folks in this area and also for this agency. So so it's been, I started with my current job with the McLean County Regional Planning Commission 2 months before the pandemic hit. And so, and also staff changes, so a lot of adjustments to make, but it's, I think we're settling down with also new staff filling some of the vacancies from few months ago, and so we kind of get back on track on doing things that we're supposed to be doing.
Sounds like a nice variety of educational and experience being all across the state to actually bring that here. So it's a very cool background. Sounds like it's a perfect fit for what your interest is and also, what you're doing. Sometimes people have a hard time making that align. Mm. How about you? Since like off the air, it was like 20 some years, you said you've been with the org?
Yes. I'm originally from Chicago. Okay. Both sides of my family have a long history in the Chicago area. And when I was a kid, we lived up there. So my family came down here in 67, I think. I grew up in Bloomington Normal.
Nice.
So it was kind of weird to come back. But went to college and then wound up staying on the East Coast for, about 25 years altogether. And then decided it was time to be closer to home. My father had died. My mother was, closer to needing me. So never really expected to wind up here again. I was in grad school over at the U of I, 2 years for a master's in planning, and then suddenly, somewhat unexpectedly, wound up working for the Regional Planning Commission. and going into transportation planning, which again I had not exactly anticipated, but it's been fun. You know, it's always nice to be part of the thing that connects everything else and sort of seeing how that works. And with my my background in the community, it was very helpful, and people seemed to sort of enthused by the idea that I'd actually come back to start this new career. And I've been at regional planning for, in September, it'll be 21 years. And September 11th, believe it or not, I actually started on that September 11th. talk about a weird start. Mm-hmm. But it's been a really interesting change in perspective. When I was still living back east, I'd come home to visit my parents a couple times a year. And my dad would pick me up at the airport, and we'd drive through town. And in, you know, the 80s and 90s, there was always something new to see, a lot of new to see, because there had been so much growth in those years. And obviously, you know, couldn't keep that up forever, but it was always a bit of a shock to do the drive home from Sierra and discover, oh, that wasn't there 6 months ago, and it's huge. What is that?
So just doing a little bit more of a deep dive into the both of you, what is something that is a unique fact or maybe something that our audiences would not know about each of you that you would want to share with those listening?
I took lessons in martial arts, kung fu, when I was in high school. It was fun. So it's hard to keep up just for fun. That's a little different.
That's
unique.
Interesting. Yeah, very cool. Yeah. How about you?
Actually, from high school, and I hope everyone who knew about this has forgotten it, I played the viola for 3 years. Okay. Just because the little orchestra at Metcalf needed a viola.
Do you still know how to play?
I could pick it up.
Had we known that, we would have had you bring it to do a little session on...
I never actually owned an instrument. It belonged to the school.
Okay.
I was one of the student musicians whose parents would beg her not to practice. At least not at home, because it was really sad.
Too funny.
Yeah. On that note, I played a little few, you know, took lessons in piano for a few years, but then, okay, you know, then kind of stopped, but I, you know, still play once in a while just for fun.
I think if we combine all of our guests, that's been a fun fact for a lot of people, is that they are musicians. Yep. I know that even Eric over at Max Leiter, he had his own band, which is where the name Max Leiter came from. Him and his brother were in a band. So we could probably have our own session set up here and have our podcast music recorded by all of our guests if you guys all got together.
So
very cool personal facts. I really enjoy the martial arts side of things. I'm also trained in Muay Thai and then traditional American boxing. So it's that's always a fun thing, good way to exercise. But I understand not doing it as we age after investing so much money in our heads, don't want to really get hit in the head too much anymore. But let's pivot a little bit and talk about the role at your organization. Like, I'm sure there's not a standard day for you, but what would a normal day look like in your role?
It would be a little bit of everything. You know, from going to meetings, and these days many are virtual, but now you're starting to have some in-person meetings, to reviewing documents, to keeping up on news about planning and transportation, and really multiple of areas that our agency does, and also have to, you know, keep and build and maintain the relationship with our partners, and you know, participate in different committees and running meetings, working with the staff to have a, you know, good rapport with the staff, and everybody's kind of working as a team on what we're supposed to be doing. So yeah, a little bit of everything. So every day goes really fast. It's not enough time every day to do what I wanted to do.
How about you?
Well, I'm a transportation planner, but I do things other than that, always okay. have. And so we, you know, there's community planning, comprehensive community planning, and the sort of odd things that kind of arrive and we think, okay, let's go do something with that. But a lot of my time is spent on our transportation program. We have a specific role as an agency with respect to that. So I talk to IDOT and Illinois Department of Transportation. I do various things that we're required to do and other things that we're sort of required to do. and keep up, as Ray said, with things that are going on with the new infrastructure law. There is an awful lot happening in transportation in terms of funding, in terms of new programs, all of which bear quite closely on some of the things we're already doing. So that's a nice coincidence. And as Ray says, every day is a little different, and by the end of the day, you could look back and think, what was all of that?
Yeah. And so diving a little bit into just the organizational itself and, like, I guess, like, what your goals are, what you guys are working on right now, because I know it does change day to day, but just the overall purpose of regional planning.
Yeah, as the term regional planning, so it's not just working for one city or one town. Really looking, really a plan for us, for our agency is by the name McLean County. So we actually, our surface area covers Bloomington Normal and all the other 20 rural communities, you know, in the rural area outside the urban metro area. So we, yeah, just dealing with urban and trying to, and rural issues, trying to be on top of those, and also to see what programs, because like Jen was saying, we're somewhat fortunate because the infrastructure law that was passed and signed last year, and which is kind of a once in a generation type of thing, mm-hmm. that we have more money, not that they don't come with conditions or terms or competitive, but then at least it's more money than used to be. And so we have more funding opportunities that we can apply for and compete for on programs that we thought would be best for the area. And so we work with, you know, continue to build and work with our partners, our local partners, whether it's urban and in the rural areas, and issues that is just not local, such as transportation planning. The roads don't stop at city limits and the town limits. So we had to think about a more broader term, the more impact, how it affects the traffic in and out of the urban area. Think about how people get to services, like health services or shopping and jobs every day, even though they might be living half an hour away. So all those take into account, but it's not just transportation planning that our agency does. We also do a lot of greenways, planning with greenway committees. We also smart cities, working with our partners in our region, and just see how our community in the different municipalities, how can we apply some of the technologies and some of the issues, that impact the daily living of our citizens, work with the universities and the community college and the school districts, whole host of partners. And even on the housing side, we heavily involved in the regional housing issues. We have committees set up that we coordinate, and really looking at the housing issues on a broader perspective. So there are a lot of things we do. Actually, depending what comes through the door, recently applied for some grants on safety for pedestrians and bicyclists. And so even we were fortunate last year, we were notified that we got a national grant from the U.S. Department of Transportation on this grant called RAISE, R-A-I-S-E. Standing for Rebuilding American Infrastructure with Sustainability and Equity.
Yes,
that's a mouthful.
Yeah. So yeah, we're one of 27 in the whole country, and they're the only entity in the state of Illinois that receives such planning grant. And our goal is to re-envision and to reinvent the 80-year-old Veterans Parkway that many of us traveled at times or every day for work or other purposes, to see how it would not be just auto-oriented, but also, can be multimodal, be good for people who prefer to walk or ride their bikes, or even for public transit. There could be more bus stops or better ways for folks to use the public transportation along Veterans Parkway. So yeah, a lot of exciting projects on the horizon. We continue to look for opportunities to enhance the quality of life for our region.
And I just have a quick question for the both of you. What would you say, either of you can answer this, would be some of the biggest challenges and or successes that you might find with regional planning?
I'll let Jen start first. She's been here longest time, and then I can add on if needed.
In terms of the, you know, our program is intended to be regional, which at a sort of basic level means in McLean County, but also means working with, we've worked with Peoria, we've worked with Champaign and Urbana on various things, and a lot of that focus is to find common issues, to look for common solutions, things that we can apply not just locally but in partnership with these other communities. That can be tough. Not everybody has the same idea of what these things should be, but at least it's a start. And you know, Ray was talking about the RAISE grant. That too has got to be a very large sort of information gathering process. And the advantage of that is that it gives us a chance to look for data that we don't currently have or that doesn't currently exist, figuring out how to develop it, create it, make it possible to examine. And that too is going to have a regional influence. We'll know more about this community when we get to the end of that project in, what, 2 or 3 years, we hope, than we ever have. And we have the capacity to deal with all of that information and see how we can put it to work and what it can tell us about not only who we are, but what we need.
So it seems like patience is going to be an overarching theme in your line of work, because like you just said, a lot of the projects that you work on can take years and years to complete or, you know, come into place in whatever city that you're working on it with.
It's either taking forever or it's over instantly and you just look around
okay.
and say, what happened? and think, okay, that was interesting. Now what comes next?
Okay.
I spent a lot of time, this is before Ray joined us, even before Vasu Gadaraju joined us, working on what used to be known as the East Side Highway Project, mm-hmm. which went on for centuries. It just seemed that way. But and it was consuming, and we never actually got anywhere with it. So we're waiting for the word to come from IDOT that it's been, you know, taken to a crossroads and a stake put through its heart. And that will probably happen at some point. And, you know, we're not going to spend $750 million on a highway where we aren't grown to that yet, and we're not likely to. So the premise that partly drove it has been disproved.
We have similar experience with our projects. I think one of the longest ones I've worked on was 12 years, and I came mm-hmm. in the end. And, yeah, there are certain projects that start and stop, and some go in 6 months. Other ones, yeah, 12 years. So we feel your pain there.
Yeah.
And I guess I want to ask another one that you might have worked on, which is controversial, but we still get asked a lot. High-speed rail coming through here.
Mm-hmm.
I wish.
Any day
yeah.
now. You know, obviously, there have been some interruptions in the process of developing high-speed passenger rail in the Midwest and here in Illinois. But at least we've stuck to it. You know, a lot of states sort of and communities, you know, large regions, kind of walked away when it started to be difficult to push it through. And we haven't done that. And of course, really what's taken place very quietly over the last few years is the track work that's essential to making this possible, because you can't do those speeds, even the sort of 80 mile an hour coming in and out of town type speeds, on track that hasn't been touched in 15 years. So that was a lot of negotiating, a lot of back and forth, a lot of discussions between Illinois and Wisconsin and the railroad and the Amtrak people. So it's an incredibly complicated process getting everybody's interests represented and making sure that everyone is being considered and worked with. You know, if it were up to me, we'd be doing 200 mile per hour trains all over the state and stuff like that. It's not up to me. So it's going to be interesting to see how this progresses.
Yeah, I'm glad you raised this issue. Actually, I'm being considered to serve on the Illinois High-Speed Railway Commission, and so we'll see how it goes. But I do take the train from time to time, and I've taken high-speed train in Asia, and I hope that Bloomington Normal will be, you know, one of the stops between Chicago and St. Louis. I know that's at least the route's been considered. And when I was with the city of Decatur, actually we were approached by the Midwest High Speed Rail Commission or Authority or whatever the group, because Decatur was one of the potential stops, and I know that's been kind of an evolving project, and the stops, you know, location's been changed and looking for the study. So, but I've seen so many passengers, you know, getting on and off from the Bloomington Normal Station. Mm-hmm. And so I hope it would become a reality that would help the economic development, that would help the residents, you know, who can even do the daily commute to Chicago for work or businesses and fun things. And really, there will be a great economic development impact, you know, from what I've seen in other parts of the world, you know, for high-speed train and how the impact would have those local economy and the local livelihood even.
Yeah, no, the teleworker aspect really shifted things during mm-hmm. COVID, because our market became really popular for people because of Amtrak. We do have the second busiest Amtrak and mm-hmm. station in the state. But people started saying, well, if I only have to go downtown Chicago once a week or a couple times a month, why not move out to a further burb? And we became a suburb of the Chicago area. So I agree that if we could lobby you to get it to run through here, it'll be a huge economic driver for us. Not just for, you know, the worker side, but also the tourism side, just yep. being able to get in and out really fast. And it also, I would think that a really cool route, and I'm not sure how this would work, but with all the students that are at Champaign-Urbana, you know, coming from Chicago, if you could drop down to Champaign, cut through us, hit Springfield, and then hit St. Louis, I think that would fit a lot of needs. And I'm not sure about current tracks, but that's not my area of expertise. I'll let you guys worry about that. But yeah, I think it'd meet a lot of people.
There has been a suggestion, proposal, whatever, sort of floating around for some years now, which essentially talks about bypassing the I-55 corridor, having the rails run that, as they already do and have done for 150 years, and then taking the high-speed line down to Champaign directly from Chicago and then cutting across to Decatur and Springfield.
Ooh.
And, well, no, yeah. is kind of my reaction uh-huh. to that. And one of the things we've talked about in some of the long-range planning we've done over the last 15 years or so is a sort of compromise to that approach. We keep the high-speed corridor where it's always been, basically, where the logical distance between Chicago and St. Louis comes through us. Mm-hmm. And then we start looking at some level of kind of regional light rail network, or even a regular rail network. Us, Peoria, Champaign-Urbana, Decatur itself, maybe up to La Salle, Peru, who knows. And as obviously the workforce changes, the kind of work that gets done changes, it's not clear how much people would have to do that, but having that sort of like resurrecting the old interurban lines that existed until, gosh, right after World War II, I guess, is when they started to crumble. But there's a lot to regret in having lost that particular capacity. And it's interesting to think that we could support the idea of really high-speed rail eventually between Chicago and St. Louis, and be part of that, and also have feeder connections into it all across central Illinois.
Yeah, we'd be all in favor of that, because, you know, as Rivian grows, as everyone else mm-hmm. continues to grow, workforce is becoming a challenge, and we've got about 30,000 people that drive in every single day to commute here.
Right.
If the rail was there, maybe we wouldn't be under the housing issue that we are, because yeah, people can stay in their current communities, hop on the train, come over, and it really free up and actually encourage commuting back and forth, because there are a lot of trailing spouses that actually leave here that might go to the U of I or somewhere else.
Yeah.
So that cross commuting is something we're actually working with Connect Transit on right now with shuttle service, you know, bringing the shuttle service back, because yeah, we don't have enough homes to house all the jobs that we have. So until the housing market, you know, gets caught up, we're all for promoting that. So any help that you need, any letters, more than happy, like we have in the past, especially with the Go Safe program. Mm-hmm. And then also now, one of the things I want to make sure that we covered is you guys have a survey that is available. So if you can talk about that survey and where to find it,
yes,
hopefully
please.
We can get some participants. So go for it.
Yeah, this is related to a 5-year plan update for our Metropolitan Long Range Transportation Plan, and we're setting the planning horizon to 2050. So looking down 20 some years ago, away further, but is that's what planning, I mean, yes, sometimes we look further down and just in trying to plan accordingly, and with the what we know of today and what we think will be happening, along with, you know, input from other experts and the public engagement side, so we can have a plan. And this is a plan that we have to update every 5 years and based on federal requirements. But the last one when we did this was 2017. So the survey that you're talking about, Patrick, is part of the public engagement process as part of the planning side. And it is a way for us to get the input from the public and from different sectors of the population, and people can be living not just Bloomington Normal, because they come in for whatever purposes, but they do take certain mode of transportation. And so we want to see what kind of challenges, what's some of the good things, bad things about our transportation system, so we can make suggestions and so that we can further improve our transportation system. And there's different ways. Undertaking this survey, people can go to the Normal and Bloomington Public Libraries, pick up hard copies. They can go to our website, www.mcplan.org, and there's an electronic copy that they can download. And also they can go to, we kind of pass out flyers, through the school districts, through different organizations helping us out to get the word out. We continue to go to different events in the community and try to get people to participate. And so we continue that this effort, which will end in June. And actually the end of June, June 30th. And although we still would, take comments, but we cannot keep collecting comments forever, otherwise the project would not be done. But I'll let Jen to talk about this. There's, some of the areas that we try to cover with the questions in the survey.
We've done surveys like this for the last, 15 years or so, previous iterations of this update process. And every time we've tried to make the questionnaire, the survey we do, a little tighter. It was way too long in 2017, and people complained. They filled it out. They actually responded, but they also said, this is way too long. You should warn us. So this one is a little shorter, a little more concentrated. And it does two things. As Ray mentioned, it asks for people's experiences with the transportation system, what they use, what they don't, what their concerns are, what they think works well, all of that. So whether it's cars or bicycles or walking, or taking planes out of Sierra, or taking rail connections to and from here, going all over the place. So all of that's covered, and we ask people, what's your experience? How do you feel about it? But we also ask about their priorities in a larger sense for the whole transportation system. So the entire array of stuff that's available, kind of laid out across the community and then beyond. Where do you think we should put our resources? Where is the area that's the least well managed or designed to sort of work for the community? And where are places in town where people feel like they're not getting adequately served by whatever it is they use? So there's the sort of informational side. We gather a lot of information and we can sit down and analyze it, six ways from Sunday, because lots of data that we can fit together. But we also get this sense about what people feel is important about transportation here and how it affects their lives, and whether they think that we should think about new ways of approaching it, in part because so much has happened in the last 5 years. The pandemic gave us an entirely new perspective on how much people have to go to the office. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, there's this conflict between a lot of companies that would really like their staff to come back, and the staff who are saying, I can do my job, 4 out of 5 days a week in my living room, it's fine. And we don't know yet how that's going to fall out. So this is sort of the first step in saying, here's the sense of that locally. And we'll see how it progresses with not just employers, but also their employees. And with the sort of varying solutions to that may emerge over the next 5 years. One of the nice things about this profession is that there's always something new happening. So it's, you never get bored, and every now and then somebody has a really genius breakthrough about a way to operate, about a thing to do, and that gets very exciting as well.
Yeah, if I may add too, the survey is provided with the English, three languages, English, Spanish, and also French. So I hope that will cover at least majority of the population. And so we will encourage everybody, if you haven't completed it yet, do so. And then also help us to spread the word with your families and friends and your networks, and really that would help for us to see how we can improve the system.
Well, I know it's really important for us in economic development that you guys have that updated, because in order to access certain funds, there has to be a plan in place. They're not just going to give funds to anyone. So we've been really successful partnering with regional planning in the past whenever we go to One Voice out in D.C., because we've been really good at, you know, asking for things that have a plan in place to actually use the money. I think a lot of times when I allocate funds, it might sit on a shelf. So your plan helps us. So please, listeners, go fill out the survey so we can get a solid plan, and that'll help us bring more dollars back, and you'll continue to see your community develop. So we really appreciate that you guys are tackling that. To pivot, though, on more of a personal level, we always like to talk about the community. And since you have been here pretty much as a townie and then gone away and come back as a boomerang, which we'd like to have more boomerangs come back as well. But if you had a prospect in town, or if you're showing our community off, if you had like one day, where are you going to take that person to show off Bloomington Normal in McLean County?
We've actually done that. It's an interesting question, because it depends on what the prospect is, would be doing with us, and,
sure,
you know, kind of what their perspective is just coming in. And there's a lot to see that's sort of unusual by the standards of a community this size. Having a Fortune 50 company in town is not your typical everyday thing, for example. When we've done this in the past, in the last couple of years, part of it's the universities, in part because they represent not just an educational resource, but a cultural one as well. Wow. So living in Bloomington Normal is not some sort of cultural wasteland, obviously. There's a lot going on here. And also just, you know, knowing that there's that resource available for, we can find people who know how to do certain kinds of research or manage certain kinds of information and get their help, have the experts really come in and give us a hand and explain how that should work and why we can defend it. I don't know, Ray, you're new here, so what do you think is the most compelling thing to see in Bloomington Normal or do?
I've done that, and also I've been introduced, you know, when I was visiting the area. It's really have like short amount of time. Definitely the university, ISU, even pointing out, hey, that we got in Northwestern, we got the Heartland Community College, and for the educational and the cultural, but also in terms of talents, in terms of workforce that will be required, you know, for a lot of the industries and businesses. And also, I think is adding the energy, you know, that life to the community, it really helps. And so I definitely would point out, I mean, this is one of the major universities in the state of Illinois, you know, having, you know, about 20 or over 20,000 students. And, you know, so that's pretty good size. Another stop, you know, would be the Vivian, definitely, in terms of future. Not that just because it's unique, and of course it's unique for our area and for the whole country, because it's just one of the two major EVs, cargo vans, SUVs, manufacturing plants in the country. But then, to me, it's a competitor to Tesla. So I think it's good for people to get excited, hey, this is right here. And another stop, you know, would be, I think what Jen was alluding to, would be State Farm. People know State Farm. They did not know the headquarters is right here in our area. So definitely State Farm. And then another, if we've got time, maybe just show the airport. I mean, it's easy to get, I mean, to park and to fly out to, you know, places. We got four airlines serving this area. For fun, we can fly down direct, you know, from here to Florida, for example. And then for work, you know, could be going to Chicago and then get connected to other major cities and other even international cities. And so so I think that would be an asset I would definitely show off. Uptown Circle, I mean, that is really nicely planned and how it's working out, you know, in terms of multimodal facility, you know, and it's kind of a unique kind of a sense of place with that. And of course, the downtown Bloomington with the Museum Square, it's kind of a really neat looking, you know, historic structure. And then with the downtown revitalization effort, I think that, you know, would be pointed Daoju. Of course, there are a few restaurants. We want to make sure that they they do get a chance to stop by and eat.
Well, that kind of leads us to the next question, jumping over to the restaurant scene. What would you think would be your either favorite BN food item or place to eat locally?
Gosh.
And you can name a few. You're not limited to just one.
I really like Biagi's. I always have. And even when they were over on Veterans Parkway, and getting in and out of their parking lot was a bit of a challenge. But so that's always been fun. It's funny, I don't eat out much these days, because we haven't been able to for so long. But my brother and I were talking the other day and trying to figure where we should go next that we haven't been to, and still working on that one. As far as a favorite sort of local food, I'm sorry, I'm a Midwestern girl. Corn. Sweet corn, dealt with in one of those festivals we have, you know, right out of the huge pit of boiling water, and I'm all over it. Can't eat much of it, but I'll take as much as I can.
Yeah, for me, I mean, besides Biagi, the Audrey Above Epiphany Farms in downtown right across from our office, you know, that's really unique too in terms of what they offers, and also the atmosphere, and then the place that I would take people to. The other kind of fun place would be the Steel Brewery. You don't have to drink, you know, go there, there's a lot of good food there. And then, those are the two primary
places. Those are good choices.
Yeah, but I'll eat anything, pretty much. I don't have a little
specific. So not too picky then?
No,
you'll go
everything.
Anywhere.
Yeah, okay. I'll try everything.
It's amazing the choice we get around here. You know, not so much on the high end, the really white tablecloth kind of place, but every chain in the universe has stopped here at one point or another, and some of them have hung on for quite a long time. And, you know, I'm always sort of entertained when somebody new comes to town and it turns into the largest opening day in that company's history, because everyone in town wants to get a chance to see what it's like. Mm-hmm. They may not come back, but the first day they're there in line, you know, waiting at 3 o'clock in the morning. So we seem to have this special enthusiasm for this particular, industry.
For food.
Resource. Yeah. And, you know, what are these people doing that's different? And I could name a half a dozen examples of places that started out, you know, jamming traffic. Doesn't hold up all that long, but it's fun to see at the outset what people will put up with to get a new kind of food.
Well, that's one of the, almost like a lead into the next one as far as economic development goes, because whenever you do bring in new restaurants, new retail, even just new jobs, that really impacts our economy. Mm-hmm. But we always like to end the podcast on, like, why does economic development matter in your mind?
My last few jobs been really involving economic development. You know, I was economic and community development, for a couple of cities, and economic development has always been part of my job duties, even in some of the planning agencies and positions. But it is important because I think it's kind of one of the basic components, for the health and well-being of a community, because it, not that this is the only major component, but then of course there's the other physical, environmental, recreational, social, physical aspects for a community. But we can see just the impact of the pandemic, when the economy goes down, when the prices goes up, and how it affects your people's livelihood, right? I mean, it affect families, affect people's not be able to pay rent, where people lost their jobs, and so it really affect a lot of aspects of a community and families and the residents. So not that this is the most crucial, but it definitely has a lot of impact. And so if we have a healthy economic development atmosphere and just efforts going on in new developments or redevelopments, it get people excited, in the community. They know there's a future for this community. They know there's jobs, and actually then we can pull people from other areas, just like there's so many other hot cities. in the country, you know, from Columbus, Ohio, to Austin, Texas, to, you know, so many other cities, people flocking to those cities for certain reasons. And I think jobs, you know, is definitely one of them, and other aspects. You know. So if we have a strong economic climate and, you know, developments happening, I think will bring people more like a positive outlook, you know, to the community, and I think it generates a lot of energy.
Yeah, and that energy, is, I think it goes, you can notice it and you can feel it. It's just whenever you put it in mathematical terms, it's really based on consumer confidence. Mm-hmm. So if people do see an area with opportunity and see growth, it boosts the consumer confidence itself, which ends up to more spending, and that's how you keep your economy rolling, which is why we refer to it as a flywheel. Mm-hmm. Like if it's going, it's going to keep going, but it starts slowing down, it can start to go in reverse. And so as people are leaving some communities to go to some other larger ones, one speeding up, one slowing down. We're just glad that we have partnerships like yours to keep ours on the right track, because we've got something going on here, and there is a newfound energy in Bloomington Normal, and we just want to make sure that we keep this thing spinning in the right direction.
We have a really good historical resource here because, and speaking as somebody whose family has lived here for 50 years, there have been waves of economic development activity in Bloomington Normal, and some of them are a nice, clear example of how not to do it from the past. And I think that we've taken a couple of turns away from some of those practices, but the go ahead and grow as much as you want to, you know, we'll make more kind of thing, the all of your eggs in one basket kind of approach. We've sort of seen some of the ways in which that may not be completely advantageous, in that there are options to that. And part of what's come out so much in the last 5 years is how many options there really are, how many ways we have to look at economic activity and say, oh, that may not be traditional, that may not be what we've always done, but it works and we can use it here.
Yeah, that was one of the scariest things of taking this role. I've been here about 2.5 years, but seeing how much was in one cluster was like, if anything happens to a couple industries, we're going to be in trouble. So the diversification that has been happening, getting back to manufacturing, which has a higher multiplier of bringing in suppliers, it's been great to see that diversification happen, because that is going to make things stable. But then also now with the housing study, thanks to your help with that too, really pushing for infill, getting back to taking care of, you know, what we have. And I know that it's easier for anyone to go out in the green grass. It costs more. So for us, if we can really encourage, which we do, the housing study even shows that, take care of your current buildings, invest back in them, invest in the core. It's just long-term wise, it's more efficient for everybody. So that's another finding that we're glad that data backed up. And that's what we really target too. So the bulk of our enterprise zone are in the harder developed areas, and we're really trying to push people to go right back in the middle to slow down the sprawl, because we've seen over time in other communities, learning from mistakes, that, you know, sprawl is expensive.
Yes. We, in doing the comprehensive plans for Bloomington and Normal, starting about 10 years ago, one of the sort of big successes of that effort in both was getting everyone to sort of recognize that exact problem. Going way, way out there and building great, huge stuff is expensive, and it continues to be expensive as long as that is there. And not everyone had really thought of it in those terms. And both of the plans, as they emerged, heavily influenced the notion of using infill as much as possible, going to areas that already had some services so you didn't have to spend a whole new pack of money on extending those. And it's taken hold in a way that I was actually a little surprised by, because it had not been typical of the thinking here in previous decades. So having that itself happen and having people not be, you know, reactive to it, thinking, oh yeah, that makes sense, was a big step. And I like seeing it continue and seeing people recognize the value of that.
And people now are almost being forced that way just to supply and demand when it comes to building materials. Mm-hmm. Like even the developers are like, well, how long is it going to take to get the materials in to build out there? Not just for the buildings themselves, but also the infrastructure under the ground. If it's not there, go to the shovel-ready areas, go to the areas that have vacant buildings, because it's already there and you can repurpose what there is. So it's not just that the planners were right, you should do this, because cost-benefit analysis shows you're going to, in the long term, be least expensive in the middle, but also now supplies are almost forcing it. So we're really hoping to see a lot of the activity going forward into some of our vacant buildings. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you guys wanted to cover?
Yeah, well, I appreciate the EDC has been a great partner, you know, in a lot of the planning efforts that we work on. And it's important to show, you know, that partnership, and is and we will continue that partnership. I appreciate, you know, all the support in on different projects, on the grant applications. What we do affect economic development, and EDC affect what we do. And so we really appreciate, you know, the open communications and the dialogue, you know, with EDC. And many of your partners are the same partners that we have. Mm-hmm. And really, I think our common goal is really to how to make our community better and better. And like a shining example, role model, you know, for the state or even other parts of the country.
Yep. No, we appreciate that too. We always say that, you know, our business is information and relationships. So without the relationships, information is not really going anywhere. So yeah, we continue the partnership. Really appreciate that. And overall, thanks for coming on. And hopefully we can push out your story and get some more people to participate in that long range plan survey.
Yeah, sounds great.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
By June 30th.
Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
Tune in next week as we continue to take an inside look at Bloomington Normal's economic development with industry pros, local businesses, and community partners, and learn more about our BN Advantage.